But we're Krishna servants, and actually we want to do it nicely for Krishna. Because it's an offering of love. If you want to give someone that you love something, to please that person, you want to do it nicely. And that type of disturbance and that type of anxiety is actually transcendental anxiety.
We are attached to the results.
Huh?
We are attached to the results.
See, there's two ways to look at it. If the center is us, you know, I really want to do well, and so people will know that I'm, you know, really a good devotee and everything. We're still the center. Then, it's calm. You know, we're caught in our karma for sure. So, at least we're giving the results to Krishna. So we'll gradually get purified. So in that sense, it's transcendental because we're giving it to Krishna. But a real devotee is thinking, he's attached to the results in the sense he wants to give Krishna something wonderful. He doesn't want to get anything out of it at all. And that's actually transcendental. The first one, when he's attached to doing the work, but he's detached from the fruit, which is the point that we'll be discussing later. You're attached to the work, but you're detached from the fruit. That is not actually bhakti, but because it leads to bhakti, it's also considered bhakti. It's subtle. Krishna consciousness is a subtle science, but we should actually understand this subtle science. And it's taught in the Bhagavad Gita. You're attached to the work. You're detached from the fruit. It's not full surrender. Therefore, it's not actually fully bhakti. But because that type of work is actually nishkam karma, but because that work leads to bhakti, it's also considered bhakti. Partially clear? See, now we can't be in anxiety about Krishna pleasure, really. Because we don't know Krishna. We don't have enough experience about Krishna. So we're selfish and we're caught. Okay, we're in Maya. But we already know that we're in Maya. So it's not a surprise. But to get out of Maya, what we do is work and give as much as we can of the fruit to Krishna, and that will purify us. And then one day, and then gradually we'll get knowledge by hearing, gradually we'll become detached, we'll become elevated to the mode of goodness, and then we'll be able to surrender more fully. Then it's not devotional service. If one's motive is distinction and profit, if it's Krishna's distinction and Krishna's profit and Krishna's adoration, then it's pure devotional service. If it's for ourselves, how is it devotional service? It's using Krishna in our service, Krishna consciousness in our service. These are called weeds, upasakagana. Nisadacha kutinati jivahimsan lava puja pratishtari yata upasakagana. Weeds in our devotional service. If we want to make advancement, we must pull them out. If you're under guidance, your guide will help you pull them out and then it will lead. But they can choke your kripa completely. Your devotional kripa. So we have to be careful. All this is done under the guidance of Guru, Vaya. You can't go through this process and make advancement without guidance. You will die spiritually.
I understand the idea of devotional service within the temple in terms of making women make devotees for deities, etc., etc. But when one is doing a job outside in the material world, how can this become devotional service?
Well, it depends what one's job is. The easiest one is that you should give money. If you're working outside and you don't give any money to Krishna, that's very hard.
So, in other words, we do our work and then just...
We try to use the fruit of the work and the facilities provided by the work, if possible, to serve Krishna. Yeah? If we work outside, we have to give some money. If not, I've seen so many people, so many aspiring devotees, think that I'll work outside and later when I have so much money, then I'll give Krishna something. It never works to give something to Krishna today. Even if it's $5 a week or $1 a week, if you can't get any money, then you should give some of your time. No post-dated service, blank check service. No, you give something today. If you have intelligence, you'll give Jesus some service. And that will build up. Otherwise, it never happens. Kaisamaya, is that your experience? Give something today. And it's not so hard. Something. Find some Krishna. Krishna will accept a leaf or clean the temple room floor, sweep anything. Prabhupada said, or it's actually a quote from somewhere, that there are four things we can give. You give everything. But if you can't give everything, you give your intelligence. And if you have no intelligence, then give your money. So if you can't give everything, and if you have no intelligence and you have no money, then at least give your words and say, oh, I like chanting Hare Krishna, it's so nice, you should chant Hare Krishna. So at least do that. So everyone can at least do that. But if one can do more, it's to our benefit. Krishna doesn't need anything. It's our great fortune that we can serve. Do some service. It's an eternal gain. And everything else is temporary. I know, I've just recently heard of one godbrother of mine who, a few years ago, he became very wealthy doing business, probably real estate or something. And then, as karma works, he lost everything. And now he laments that I had all that money and I never came to Vrindavan and I never did any service with it. I hoarded it and I got proud. And now I can't do anything. So as soon as Krishna gives us something, immediately we should engage it in his service. Immediately. This is what I lived outside the temple for 2.5 years at one period in my life. And I learned this. It's our benefit. It's our benefit. Even though the devotees may say, give like that, and we start thinking, oh, it's for their benefit. But actually, it's for our benefit. So we should always do, there's no meaning to being a devotee unless we do service. A devotee can't exist without service. It's dharma. It's his very nature. Everyone has to serve. But the devotee, his life is service to Krishna and the devotees of Krishna. And then we'll become happy.
So when we say superior here, like if you have some money to give it to the temple or to spend yourself like on going to Vrindavan and using it out.
Obviously, you have to examine it. If you're asking if you had some money, you obviously chose to come to Vrindavan. What can I say? Because everyone has some money, right? Or else that we couldn't have got here. So we chose to come here. But Vrindavan is our life. It's where we breathe air, spiritual air, and eat prasadam and get strength so we can go back and preach. Get strength, we can go back and lead a spiritual life. So we shouldn't neglect Vrindavan, that's the principle. We shouldn't neglect coming to India, Prabhupada said that. But we have to be practical. So we can't say, you have a family, your children are all starving, they're out in the street in the ice of Denmark. Not right? Sweet. No, it's moved. Okay. They're in the ice and it's below 50 degrees. And then you say, well, very nice. So they should come to Brazil. And the tears on your little child's eyes are always in the icicle. Oh, very nice. to be practical, so individual case is an individual application. Okay, now I can go back. But it's in the I can see it. Yesterday we spoke at length about the progressive system of sacrifices that are recommended in the Vedas, which basically describes the essence of the Vedic culture. The Vedic culture is set up for the purpose, for Vanashrama purposes, to organize society so that people can live in a peaceful way and yet make spiritual advancement. So the essence of the Vedic culture, the Vanashrama society, is spiritual advancement. So when one takes to the Vedic culture, he performs activities, although that he may be materially entangled in the world and materially attached, still the activities that he performs will gradually elevate him in consciousness. And elevation in consciousness means elevation from ignorance or passion to goodness. And as one becomes elevated to the mode of goodness, what happens is that his desires change. The symptom of the mode of passion is that it gives birth to unlimited desires and longings. And the symptom of the mode of goodness is that happiness and knowledge develop. You go, could you close that door? So what results from the mode of passion is one gets filled with so many desires and longings. And the nature of material desires is that they burn like fire. We have a tendency to think that if we attempt to satisfy our material desires, then we will become satisfied. But the example is given in the Bhagavad Gita, in the second chapter, I believe, that it is simply like fire and putting fuel on the fire. So if you think that the fire needs something to burn, and therefore I'll give it some wood and thereby satisfy it, no, the fire only grows more and more hungry. So similarly, when we try to satisfy our material desires, our desires simply grow and grow and grow. That is the mode of passion, and therefore the result of the mode of passion is distress. Because how frustrated we are when we have unlimited desires. The more we have desires, it is not that we become more and more happy, but every desire that we fulfill gives birth to so many more desires. So the more desires we have and the more we attempt to fulfill them, the more frustrated we become. So material desires and the mode of passion lead to distress in that way. So therefore we never cultivate the mode of passion unless we're in the mode of ignorance. Then the mode of passion is a step upward. So when we take to the Vedic system, what happens is that though we are entangled in our material desires, by taking to the Vedic system, at least we're surrendering to that authority, that we're accepting the fact that we cannot be happy and get our desires satisfied independently. We have to depend on another. So this is a very big step for a materially conditioned soul, because we're in the material world because we want to be independent and we're envious of Krishna, and when we're envious of Krishna, we're envious of anyone better than us. So just to surrender to someone that, yes, for my happiness I have to please this demigod or that demigod, is a big step in the right direction. And I have to not only please the demigod, but I have to please him according to the way that's prescribed in the Vedas. So therefore, in that way, there is a great surrender due to the acceptance of authority. Then, and when that is transposed to contemporary civilization, we can understand that that means that the mode of ignorance should not be cultivated. Rather, one should cultivate the mode of passion. It is better than the mode of ignorance. That means one should work. And this is one of the prime themes of the Bhagavad Gita, that we should work. We should work.
We should work very hard. Because in that work, there is a chance at least to offer some of the fruit of the work to Krishna. But if we're just lazy and don't do anything, there is no chance of any good coming to us. So this is the basic principle, that work is better than not working. Even if that work is fruitive or born of material desires, it's still better to work than not work. So this will come up in the section that we're going to read today in the third chapter. So one should work, and then one should gradually accept that there is a purpose to life. And how does that come, that acceptance? That comes by association, that comes by knowledge. It comes by hearing, shastra. And that is born out of piety, goodness of the heart, and previous purva sanskars, previous impressions of the heart of spiritual life. Born of that will be some piety and a tendency to surrender to God. And you see that among so many people, whether their tendency is ignorance or passion or goodness, there are so many people that have a tendency towards love of God. And you see this when you're distributing books. I don't know if you have had this experience. Who's distributed books here? Raise your hand if you've done a lot of book distribution. That's a lot. So sometimes someone very, very well dressed and sophisticated, very intelligent, walks by and you hand them a book and it snarls and teeth almost seem to grow. And then some low looking person walks by. As soon as you show him a book, he's so attracted. So why is that? It doesn't have anything to do with the modes of material nature. It has to do with something special. Spiritual credits that these different people have built up or not built up in their hearts. But generally the principle is that one tries to become elevated in the modes of material nature. So when one works, even if it is passionate, selfish work with no spiritual end, that is better than someone who does not work at all. And someone who works, once he understands through knowledge and spiritual experience that there is a supreme and he is tiny and insignificant, then his work can become yoga. And so much of the preaching that we do in different parts of the world, in India, in the United States, in England, with congregational members, is like this. We preach to people and we tell them, you're working so hard and life is temporary and you cannot take it with you. You should give something to Krishna. You should renounce some of the fruit of your work to Krishna. So gradually, by doing that, because that's based on knowledge and it's based on a little detachment, gradually what happens over some time and chanting Hare Krishna and association and purification is one becomes elevated in consciousness and no longer is one attached to his work, the fruit of his work. He's no longer attached to making material advancement. And that is called nishkam karma, and it is a situation that is very much in the mode of goodness. That one is working, but he doesn't desire to get the fruit of one's work. In other words, he's not working to get anything. He's attached to his work, his duty, but he's not interested in getting the fruit from his duty. Now this consciousness is what's going to be described in the second part that was a continuation from yesterday. We sort of gave a summary of what we learned yesterday plus a little more. And now we're going to hear about someone in the situation that's different from the person who's working to get some fruit, to make money, to enjoy his life. And it's different from the person who's interested in attached to those things, but yet he wants to make advancements in spiritual life. This person has no material attachment, which naturally comes by the process of hearing and chanting and doing service and giving up the fruits of one's work. Gradually, one becomes detached, especially by association and experiencing the higher taste of Krishna consciousness and engaging in the spiritual purificatory process. So any questions so far? Because that was just the summary.
Now we see in the wisdom civilization they are very passionate, working very hard for this, so they also destroy it. Is that ignorance, or would it be better for them to be more in ignorance so they wouldn't destroy so much?
No, how is it if they're more in ignorance, how would they destroy less? Destruction is in the mode of ignorance.
That's the ignorance.
Like, no, that is ignorance, destruction. That is ignorance. Passion is creation. Ignorance is destruction.
So when you create an atom bomb.
Yeah, good point. That's creation for the purpose of ignorance or destruction, which naturally happens because passion, this will be described in the third chapter, that passion leads to ignorance. This will be specifically described. To protect your material creations, you want to kill everyone else, which is anger, the mode of ignorance.
You just said that if you become Kama Yoga, the person is attached. He's detached from
the fruit of his work, but attached to the work.
Because in your notes, in fact, you spoke of Vishnu Kama Yoga, I see the lady said it is, she's detached from the work as well.
That's higher. That's the, no, that's higher. That's higher. That will come higher, that will be
what is only attached.
No, it's attached. But born of the mode of goodness, Nishkam Kama Yoga means a tendency towards attachment to the world. Yeah, and his duty. He's attached to his own duty. He's not attached to the getting anything from it, but it's a dutiful consciousness. Duty. That's the key word in understanding Nishkam Karma and work in the mode of goodness. And from that comes knowledge. From working in the mode of goodness that's going to be described comes knowledge. And what is knowledge? That you're not your body. Yes, we have to be in goodness to become conscious. It means it's a polite way of saying we're using our passion in Krishna's service. It is transcendental in the sense that it's better than using our passion in other ways, and it's transcendental in the sense that it brings transcendental results. But it's not really devotional. Devotion is born. Goodness is the jumping off point from devotion. But you can't tell people that because then they get discouraged. I didn't tell you that. Oh, what else? When someone, I want to work, I have so many things to do. Yes, you should work for Krishna. Yes, it is transcendental, it is wonderful. You know, and they see so many people in their way. I'm working for Krishna, I don't care. I'm working for Krishna. And that's what we think in our temples most of the time. A passion to serve Krishna, which is good, because they're serving Krishna. Gradually they can become purified. Give you a few million for serving Krishna. Yeah. Are you a doctor? No wonder you're complaining. Okay, let's move on. Now Krishna in text 17. Chapter 3, text 17. But for one, now here there's a difference. Whenever, usually when there's a two in the verse, yas tu atmaratir eva syad, that means there's a change of subject. But when there is, when someone is atmarati, or takes pleasure in the self, whose human life is one of self-realization, who is satisfied in the self only, fully satiated, for him there is no duty. So the question is, if someone doesn't, it's clear why some, if someone has so many material desires, it's clear why he's working to satisfy his desires. But should a person who has no material desires, should he work? That is the question that's going to be raised. He's not interested in gaining anything, so should he work? He has no duty to perform because he doesn't have anything that he's trying to get. Should he work? So that's going to be described. A self-realized man has no purpose to fulfill in the discharge of his prescribed duties. He has no reason to perform his duties because he's not trying to get anything. Nor has he any reason not to perform such work. Nor has he any need to depend on any other living being. Why? Because he's not trying to get anything. He doesn't need anything. He's atmarati, satisfied in the self. So does he work or not? So this is going to be explained in the next few verses. Now a principle is going to be stated. Krishna is going to explain a principle. And this is actually the level that he is requesting us to work on at this point. And it can become even more fully transcendental when we add a few things to it. But this is the basic level that one should work on. Therefore, without being attached to the fruits of one's work, of one's activities, one should act as a matter of duty. For by working without attachment, one attains the supreme. So this is the basic level of Nishkam Karma, of working without attachment, but doing one's duty properly with great attention. Not that we put too much salt in the dal every day and say, well, I'm not attached. Of course, you eat in the restaurant, so of course you're not attached, but everyone else is disturbed. No, we do our duty very, very carefully, dutifully, but without attachment to the result. Now, next, in text 20, we're getting an example of that principle of someone who works. He's not attached to the fruit of his work. So he works, he gives up attachment to the fruit, but he doesn't give up work. And the example is King Janaka, who is a sadhu. Kings such as Janaka attain perfection solely by performance of prescribed duties. Because if one works without detachment, so that takes the mode of good, without attachment, that's the mode of goodness. And then what is the result of that? One attains the supreme. That's in text 19. Because if one works in the mode of goodness, one starts understanding clearly that he's not his body. This is the transcendental process. So it goes from ignorance to passion, when one's attached to the fruit of one's work, and then one gets the transcendental objective, although he's attached to the fruit of his work, and he starts renouncing the work, the fruit in Krishna's service, and then gradually by doing that, he becomes detached from the fruit of his work, and then by working in a completely detached way, especially for Krishna, then for Krishna's pleasure, not only detached, but attached to Krishna, then one actually will make great, great advancement. And this is the process. These are the steps in the process. And that's why sometimes the devotees, they'll go out on Sankirtan. And what is the mood in which we should go out on Sankirtan? We should go out in a very surrendered way, distributing books like that, and just giving the books and taking donations. But when people take the donations and keep some of the money also, then they're not acting on this platform. And it's very bad. Especially if they're asking for donations for Krishna, and then they keep some of the money for themselves. It's very bad. Very, very bad. There's so much sinful reaction attached to that.
What if it's a situation where you have the community, they wouldn't go out at all in the expenses?
That's okay. Then it's looked at you're taking a percentage, you're doing, you have to keep something to maintain yourself, to maintain your body. So when someone is just doing that, like a householder, to maintain his body in an authorized way, that's authorized by Prabhupada, it's on the same level basically as one detached. But if one basically, I'm describing someone who's stealing. And Krishna said, the thief is funny. Because he doesn't have any reason to act, and one of the alternatives in action is not acting. He's not motivated by either acting or not acting. So he has no material motivation at all. So you say if you have a job and you don't feel like work, you don't got to feel like going to work today, so you have a motivation not to do your work. And you're going to get your pay anyway, or something like that, or you don't care. But he has no motivation either way. Right. Well, but the point is that why go to work is there for him. So should he work or shouldn't he work? He has no. Of course, if one has spirit, we're not talking about spiritual duties here. This is on a different level. He should work for Krishna. So if his work is for Krishna, then he should do it. Action. Because that type of work is never given. But this is also, this is explained, that point that we're making about taking donations and keeping it. This is, in, later on it's explained also how simple that is. That when a brahmana collects money and doesn't distribute sufficiently, but gets fat on his donations, it's very inappropriate and very sinful. So he's allowed to take donations to maintain himself. That's what, security? The essence of sannyas and the essence of, actually the essence of Krishna consciousness is dependence on Krishna. In the material world, everyone is trying to be independent. And in Krishna consciousness, we depend on Krishna and we are satisfied depending on Krishna. Of the essence, we won't talk about it right now. So the example given is Janaka Maharaj. 21, famous verse. Yad yarat charati shreshta satsare vicharojana yat pramanam kurute lokastad anabhaktati. Whatever great action a great man performs, common men follow. And whatever standard he sets by exemplary acts, all the world pursues. Now this is why the person who has no material desire to fulfill by performance of his duty, this is why he works. Now this isn't the only reason, because when we're talking about Krishna conscious people, devotees or devotees aspiring to be Krishna conscious, there's a different level added on the whole system actually. Because they're detached materially but attached spiritually. And they don't work materially but they work spiritually. But here the point is that if someone doesn't work, he's going to set a very bad example. He's in the mode of goodness. He's practically transcendental. Because Prabhupada in so many purports equates the mode of goodness with transcendental. It's so fine and pure. It's almost transcendental. But if someone doesn't work, then people follow their example and the result it's very bad that people in the mode of passion should be working get degraded into the mode of ignorance. This would be reasonable. And then Krishna tells a very heavy example over here, 22 and 23. Son of Pita, he says that even I myself work. There is no work prescribed for me within all the three planetary systems. That means that Krishna, he said this in the fourth chapter, when he explains Satavana Maya Shishtam Gunakama Vavagata, he explains that I created the Vanashrama system, but I have nothing to do with it. I'm beyond it myself. Akata. I'm beyond it, this system. So But yet, although, and not only that, Krishna owns everything. All opulence, all wealth is his. So what does he need to do any duties for? What does he need to work for? He has nothing to gain. But yet Krishna says, I am the, there is no work prescribed for me within the three planetary systems, nor am I in want of anything. I don't need anything, so I don't have to work, nor have any need to obtain anything, and yet I am engaged in prescribed duties. Why? And why prescribed duties? Because he follows Shastra for that same reason. This set a good example, because we all have a tendency to look at people above us and say, well, he's not doing it, why should I? Even though Krishna may be lifting Govindan Hill with one finger, as soon as he wants to dance with the gopis, he says, well, he's doing that, why shouldn't I do that? So this is the nature of envy. So Krishna says that I am setting the example, this is why I'm working myself. And if we read the Krishna book in the tenth canto of the Bhagavad Gita, we see Krishna acted as an ideal householder in Dwapara, followed all the Vedic rules and regulations. And then 23, for if I ever fail to engage in carefully performing prescribed duties, O Partha, certainly all men would follow my path. And if I did not perform prescribed duties, all these worlds would be put to ruination. I would be the cause of creating unwanted population, and I would thereby destroy the peace of all living beings. So it's very interesting how in the first chapter, one of Arjuna's main arguments was, in the first chapter, text 37 onward to 42 possibly, O Janardana, although these men, this is what Arjuna has said, although these men, their hearts overtaken by greed, see no fault in killing one's family or following a friend, this is Arjuna speaking, why he didn't want to fight. Why should we who see the crime of destroying a family engage in these acts of sin? With the destruction of the dynasty, the eternal family tradition is vanquished, and the rest of the family becomes involved in irreligion. When irreligion is prominent in the family, O Krishna, the women of the family become polluted, and from the degradation of womanhood, all descendants of Vrishni comes Vana Sankara, unwanted progeny. And because of the increase of unwanted population, certainly causes hellish life, both for the family and those who destroy the family tradition. So Arjuna says, if I fight in this battle, I'm going to be the cause of Vana Sankara. And what Krishna is telling Arjuna here is if you don't fight in the battle, if you go to the forest and renounce your duty, then you're going to be the cause of Vana Sankara because of the bad example that you're setting. And what is the result of this unwanted population? You can see it in every city of the world, that these people are just wandering around and they're destroying the peace of all living beings. They're turning, and this is because in Kali Yuga, there's so much Vana Sankara, the world is being turned into hell. Literally hell. Where you can't walk in the street and people kill you and shoot you. Even young children, there was a very famous case in the newspaper very recently with young children. How old were they? I'm sure. They wanted two boys or something. They wanted to see what it's like to kill somebody. They killed, how old was the child they killed? So just imagine the consciousness, even at a young age, that these children have. They want to see what it's like to kill. This is Vana Sankara. And it's said also in the schools, in the public schools in the United States and things like that, it's so dangerous. Some of the schools are shooting, the kids are shooting each other, shooting the teacher, there's gangs. This is insanity. Vana Sankara, it's hell. The children are so afraid and so much anxiety that they're afraid of someone killing them. Going into school. It's crazy. Because childhood is supposed to be free of anxiety, supposed to be peaceful, happy time. And these children are in so much anxiety because someone is going to kill them. Some gang in the school, protection money in the schools. If you don't pay money to people, they'll kill you. Speaking of what the teachers are feeling. What happens if I fail this child in math? And this is just, I remember when I was a boy, I'd hear, you know, the older people, you know, someone 40 years old talking about, when I was a boy, you know, these things didn't go on and everything was nice. And it used to sound so silly. But now that I'm 47, I'm thinking, even when I was a boy, which is only 35, 40 years ago, or whatever, none of these things were going on, even in the West, even in New York City, which has such bad PR. But none of these things were going on at all, practically. We never would even lock our doors at night or anything like that. So Kali Yuga is descending so fast, and this is one of the main agents, this Vana Sankara. Families completely destroyed, illicit sex, mixing boys and girls at the youngest age, and therefore everyone, the whole world is going to hell so quickly. So quickly. On with Krishna's prescription here. He's saying, Janaka performed his prescribed duties in the same perfection. Even I do my duties, and you want to leave our duty? You want to go to the forest and give up your duties? As the ignorant perform their duties with attachment to the results, the learned may similarly act, but without attachment, for the sake of leading people on the right path. Now, here is an interesting point here. So as not to disrupt the minds of the ignorant men attached to the fruitive results of prescribed duty. So people who are working fruitively, you know, they're working like donkeys all day and night just to make money. So here's Krishna's description of what to do with them. We tend to want to say, you are fools, you are donkeys, why are you wasting your life like that? You should give up everything. Stop this. And of course we want them to chant Hare Krishna. Devotees. But if there's too much emphasis on how foolish material life is, and if they're in the mode of passion, what happens? A learned person should not induce them to stop work, because that's what happens. They realize that, yes, I'm so stupid working all day and night just to make some money, and I'm not going to be happy by that money. So I'm not going to work. And this is just what happened in the 60s in so many parts of the world. The young people realize that my parents are working like junkies all day and night, and they're not happy. So I'm not going to work. But rather, they becoming elevated in consciousness by that realization, they became even more degraded. And they just got involved in illicit activities, intoxication, etc. So they went from passion to ignorance. So therefore this point of working is so important. Even if you realize that this is the most foolish thing is to engage in passionate work, trying to make money and get a car and get your house. Even if you realize that, work should still go on. What, how should we instruct people rather than telling them only that material things are no good? Useless to acquire them? How should we instruct them? We should not induce them to stop work, rather by working in the spirit of devotion.